And so to the degree that the two data sets show the same thing,
yes.
and one has virtually no cost to the practice,
yes.
whereas the other is a manual collection or something to be developed, then if we see the two shake out the same and the group becomes happy with the asymptomatic issue, we've got the same kind of measure, same data set, and we've taken burden out of the practice.
Okay.
Although there's still the additional work to make the CMS measure work for the under 65. So there would still be a research recommendation would be, I think, going forward, you'd also want to be able to get the admin data to look at what they're doing.
Yeah, although, I mean, the imaging rates in over 65 are so much, it's so much hot, you know, it's 3 to 4 times.
So any more comments on this proposal on the table, which is to have the measure expanded to include PCI, but to be reported as a CABG and a PCI measure separately? Yes, so that we would expand this to include PCI, but we would report out CABG and PCI separately.
And again,
in essence, created a separate second measure.
To be
never
clear,
do
the,
here.
The 2-year PCI, not the 5-year like you have the CABG written, obviously. Same time period.
Yes.
And then we forgot to mention for you guys, but CTA, you don't pay for CTA, so it's not an issue, right? Medicare does?
Yeah.
I can't get any of mine paid for. I must have a bad carrier. So CTA should be included then, I believe. CTA including it?
Okay. That's
right. But if you don't need a stress test, I can't imagine needing a CTA. And we threw it in the ACC measure.
Yeah.
Bottom line is that we come up with a harmonized measure for both
procedures. And both are out of both.
I think if we
think CTA is also has a different Don Rucker CTA I think also has a different behavior if you're doing it for people who have known coronary disease, which presumably is the case for people who have had a CABG or a PCI, you know, in terms of durability, finding plaque, right? I mean, we're talking that we're moving from luminology kind of studies to studies that actually show intrinsic wall disease, and so they in the sort of people who are not known to have heart disease, it's a very, very different performance curve, potentially a very different durability. So, here I think it's not as important, honestly, because you already have known disease and you're really looking at luminal issues more than you are presence of disease. But I would just throw that out as a important thing. I think you wanted to get some guidance from our cardiologists here in reworking.
The other aspect is that for a long time, if not continue, these are local coverage decisions. They're not all the same, so that it's covered in some areas of the country and in some isn't. And that sort of differentiation and the variation.
But either point, I think here, neither one would change, I think, your proposal of including it.
Right. Because the utilization is going to go up,
using it
and we don't want to push the business
anywhere.
To that.
It's low using it. And B, they would argue that it may or may not be covered,
right.
But who cares?
Right. And once again, they would have to change the measure to include PCI with the stricter standards. Associated with that.
Right, 2 years.
Yes. Yeah, so I would suggest, as you vote on this, we'll vote with the expectation that we're going to get a revised measure back. You guys can take a closer look at, obviously, after discussions to make sure it actually meets.
So I guess the question is,
should we vote on a revised measure that has this many revisions?
I think that maybe the answer is
we should agree to delegate the cardiologist leads out of this group that has devoted the time already to coordinate with them and then come back with something that's consistent that they can recommend.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm willing to do that. I would like to coordinate with some of the people from the original group just because. We want to make sure we're not missing something that they were thinking.
I
know.
Would suggest, based on the conversation we've heard today, that I would not like only a cardiologist involved for a reason. I mean, somebody mentioned. I'm very, very clear on this. One of the challenges is if we take all the exclusions out, it becomes, I personally believe, a non-existent. We're going to get so much pushback from all the cardiology community that it's going to be invalid by the community because of the numbers. So I think
that's
we need to get other people on the table that have. That can look at that as well. At least that would be our.
So I think it'll be up to you all to pull in what parts of the committee you choose to. You can choose to use us as resources or not. Ultimately, this will come back to this committee for a revote. If we want to take a straw poll now to say, would we be interested in revisiting it, I think in general the feeling is, would be interested in revisiting it, no promises. That would be the editor of JAMA's comment. Sure, send me your paper. We'll be happy in reviewing it.
Can we clarify? I first, sorry, I know.
Yes.
We've heard a lot of things that we're asked, and we're not sure what we're asked. We've heard a lot of things that we're asked, and I want to be sure what the expectations are, because it's going to be a significant level of effort for us.
Oh, 5 years of data.
I mean, 5 years of data, just to get it, then you go, oh, we also want this and that. I mean, just to give you one step to another, there was discussion on inclusion, and rerunning the data cost a few $100,000 to do it again. I don't want to just say, oh, we should have done this, and then
we can do it.
We're ending the story.
We'll,
somebody can help
we'll write up exactly what the committee, based on the discussion today, exactly what the committee is requesting. We'll run it back by the committee and then send it to you. So you don't do anything until we've got an agreement with the committee.
Great. Okay. Moving on. Back on you, Joe. We can go to
what number are we?
What are we doing? The preamping or the
what number?
17.
Which one? You only have your next one, right?
Yeah.
17.
Oh no, 17 is
better. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, 17. I think we can do this quickly. So the idea on 17 is it groups looking. So again, we're looking for inappropriate people to stress, and it groups the three types of people we're going to look at in separate measures: patients that have asymptomatic initial assessment of asymptomatic patients, routine testing after PCI, and preoperative testing in low risk surgery patients. But it's not looking at the rate of use of stress in those three groups, because those are all three separate measures. It actually looks at the proportion of test requisitions in patients' chart that document the use of stress, nuclear stress echo, with adequate data to demonstrate avoidance of the common inappropriate uses. So it's kind of a very different measure. So it's how many charts of people that had stress disorder, how many of the charts have enough data in them to prove it wasn't for these three bad reasons. Okay, so that's why I think it's kind of a, 17. I mean, I would propose that maybe, if you know enough to vote no against it yet, but the three measures are already identified, right? So if we're already looking at asymptomatic patients, already looking at post-PCI patients, already looking at...
I don't have a 17. I have two versions of 16.
Me too.
I have 17. 17 was in the documents they sent out about a week and a half.
Right,
last Thursday.
No, I have a 17.
It's not 17, but you get into it. See, you have the same thing. It's 16 right there.
16.
Could you just scroll down past that? For some reason, the bookmark.
Oh, the bookmark is wrong. That's all.
Yeah, the bookmarks bring it to 16. If you scroll down past 16.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's like that typed one or something.
I think it's just the bookmark.
This one? The format's different?
So just
I don't have it then.
Just the title
keep going.
Of this measure
it's this,
is there.
It's this one. Right?
There it is. It's there.
Go to page.
Page 317 or 318 on the PDF.
Yep.
It comes after this text document.
Yep.
And then there's another
318
grid. All right, okay.
So I think two reasons why maybe we don't need this. One is, again, all three criteria are separately identified as looking for overuse. The other one is it's a bit of a difficult thing. If the numerator is the number of recs or charts that have data to answer, but the denominator, again, is already patients that are post-PTCI, pre-op, or risk stratified or asymptomatic. So in some respects, if you already know the denominator is a post-PCI patient, you sort of already must know in the numerator that it was a post-PCI patient. That's why the test was ordered. I mean, that's why the test was done. So now you don't know whether it was done in under 2 years or the chart has to document that, but it's a measure I don't think we need, and it's a measure that I don't think the numerator and the denominator are significantly different from each other. I don't know if that made any sense. It's a funny measure, right? So how many charts these patients have got in stress for one of those three reasons have the data to tell me that that's the reason why they had the test, kind of.
It would have been nicer if just an indication, for example.
What do you mean? component.
Oh, this is a data adequacy?
Rather than...
like how well it's charted?
Do I have enough data to prove that it wasn't ordered, it was or wasn't ordered for one of these three bad reasons?
So you're saying it fails on the importance.
Yes. That's why I'm suggesting we vote on importance.
Okay.
Right up front.
Okay. Joe, do you want to have any comments before the issues have been raised about importance? If you fail on importance, you fail on the measure. Do you want to address that issue?
Sure. We developed this measure to avoid one aspect of gaming. We know that as far as people can record whatever, they can record different pieces of information to try to game it, but the easiest way to game the other measures is to just fail to document anything in the chart related to these issues, and therefore the patient comes up uncategorizable rather than being able to assess them into one of these categories. And so it is the point that was brought out related to having the date recorded, having the different pieces of information that we need for each, the surgery recorded, things like that, so that we can evaluate this. We understand if there are some concerns about importance, we feel that it will help avoid people just not recording things and then therefore doing better or looking more like they aren't doing inappropriate tests just because they fail to record something.
This is Scott. I don't think you need this at all. I agree, because if it's already implied, and if we adopt any of the other measures, you got to have accurate data. So to have a freestanding measure that assesses the adequacy of data without having a measure that assesses the use of the exam wouldn't seem to be appropriate for this forum, in my opinion.
I mean, there are also a lot of legal requirements. We have to have this data.
Okay. Great. So should we vote on importance?
Yeah.
Okay. Public comment?
No.
Thank you. Okay. How many vote in high importance? Moderate importance? Low importance? Got the count? Okay.
I got married.
So, Joe, this was voted down on importance. Okay, moving on to, anybody have a preference?
Asymptomatic and pre-op.
Yeah, asymptomatic and pre-op. So, do you want to do
the
one?
Pre-op, so we should do back to that.
Right. So
did we do 16?
We should do the other ACC measure, I think, now.
16.
Okay, Dr. Snow?
Measures the cardiac stress imaging does not meet the appropriate use criteria testing an asymptomatic low risk patient. We talked before about how we believe this is a for the outcome or evidence to support the focus. And there's, I think, adequate evidence to be able to see. Moving down to two enumerators. This is the number of spread spec and myocardial perfusion images, imaging and stress echo performed for asymptomatic low coronary heart disease risk patients for initial detection and risk assessment. This is done with a number of exclusions, and I think there's some issues with this. The first issue is low risk. Because the way low risk is being assessed is by the clinician. It's an opinion. And what would be more appropriate here, I think, would be an objective measure, such as a Framingham risk. Ray Gibbons, when he was here earlier, commented about a study that he's aware of, which risk assessed by a physician versus an objective measure could vary quite a bit. So I think that in itself is a problem. The exclusion criteria, I think, have the benefit of providing a more uniform sample, but there are a number of issues, I think, that are related to it. Not always clear. Patients aren't always certain about what test they had, so you might not have good data here to begin with. That was another comment that Ray had. And I think there are unintended consequences from these exclusion criteria, which we will discuss later. So I gave this a P. For the denominator is the number of stress suspected DIs and stress echoes performed. That's, I think, pretty straightforward. Moving down to reliability testing.
Yes. May I just a clarification? But the denominator is an exclusion that I didn't understand. It says patients without selection criteria recorded. Isn't that a kind of a squishy, easy out?
Well, I think that's a good point. Yeah, I think
right, but might that not be excluding many of the patients we're trying to identify?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it creates more.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So the intent here is to use registry data or lab data. Reliability testing, again, I think there's some reasonable support for this, so I gave that a C. And for validity, I also gave that a C, also because there's some reasonable support. Now, whether the evidence supporting the exclusion criteria, I think the intent here is to be certain that the patient doesn't have known coronary artery disease, and so they gave that a C. The risk adjustment outcomes, the resource use measures, gave an N. There was no risk assessment, and for identification of meaningful differences in performance. And comparability, multiple data sources and methods, and can't. Really hasn't been much done. And there's NA for disparities. In terms of usability, I gave that a C. harmonization, MA. Distinctive or added of value, the C. And in terms of usability, I gave that overall a C. Feasibility, the data generated by byproduct of care processes, I also gave a C. And for electronic sources, a P. And the reason why I gave that a P is, again, it's not always clear from electronic records or what procedures patients have had. It might have been done at other facilities. And so it's going to be a bit of a dirty data set. For exclusions, I gave that a P. And again, the importance of here, I think, is to have a uniform data set. But I mentioned earlier the problem of having somewhat unreliable exclusion data. But I think worse than that, I think, is going to be the unintended consequences for it. And those could be, for example, so you want to do a spec study, you can't do it if the patient has had a calcium score. So you might be inclined to do a calcium score or do a CTA or some other test in order to be able to do your spec study. So I think it really has a risk of driving up other testing. So feasibility, I gave it an M, and my final recommendation was not to approve this as written.
Okay. Comments from others in the group?
Yeah. Interesting to me that I came out very similar in some ways, but generally more harsh. I hate this measure. I think there's an issue here, but they wouldn't even be looking at it if you were in the And in fact, one of the things.
So, well, just to be clear, when you vote, H does not stand for hate versus I.
We're at that point.
Fair enough. That's just a snow, by the way. On the record. A lot of my displeasure was in the second item because I think that it's already mentioned, but I just was much more worried about it. The risk being done by clinician estimate. Ray was particularly eloquent in that particular one because they did a study in which the Mayo they can do much more easily than many places, which they had clinicians estimate the risk, and then went back and looked at the data, and they found that the clinicians had overestimated the risk very substantially and consistently toward, performing a procedure. And I think there's an inherent moral hazard in the way this thing is structured that's very hard to get out of. So the two really had me going. There were also some issues around the volume. Again, 30 cases is a low number, and you're going to really penalize smaller establishments. So at the end of it, and there were several instances in which Art gave something a B or a C, and I would give it an M. But we came out no for the global assessment, I think for similar kinds of reasons. So it's just a
okay. Can I
grading difference.
Sure. I'll just go again. And I think some of the issues here could be repaired potentially. So for the exclusions, if it could be maybe just changed to no known coronary disease. No history, no known. That I think would take care of a number of issues. And for the risk assessment, if that were made a quantitative objective measure like Framingham, I think that would address issues. Now, whether that could be done within the registry and what the lab is being submitted, I don't know, and perhaps Joe could address that.
So I think Joe will address this. My suspicion is the trade-off here, and this is where we have to really make a judgment here, the trade-off is just how difficult it is to calculate these things and how often they're calculated in the real world, which is almost none. The flip of that is to say, which way is the bias go here? Are we, do physicians over or under code risk? We tend to overestimate risk, right? Is that, I think that's what Ray's data is.
Except it's all retrospective data. And how, you know,
right. Well. Okay. Put even a stronger measure. Do it publicly reported, and we will really overcode risk. I guess the point being is the only defense I might come back to is to say, if you actually did code it as low risk, and/or it's potentially eligible for chart reviews, you could get around this by not doing it, and then going if no one met the low risk category, you could do chart reviews or something, but. I don't know, Joe. I'm sorry, I shouldn't speak to this. Joe, I think it's probably reasonable to have you speak to this at this time. Is that right?
Sure. We had an extensive discussion of risk calculation when we were developing this measure, and you'll note in the specifications that we do say that we would encourage folks and would require folks in calculating their risk to use all available variables that they had for Framingham, meaning that everything that is available to them in the chart at the time when they're doing this, they should use that to calculate risk and to use age-based and gender-based averages for those that are missing. And the most common ones we saw in the pilot were cholesterol values that were missing. And so our group in the specifications, it is somewhat between a full risk calculation, meaning that the measure would actually collect all the variables and then do the risk calculation to verify it on the other side. And just having the physician code in for the measure, the risk that they calculate based on what's available at the time of when they're filling out this piece of information. So we thought the data collection burden to have folks submit every variable to calculate Framingham and then on the back end, ensure that was calculated properly for measured data collection was both too high on the clinician because they may be missing a couple of variables, specifically cholesterol values, and on the folks that would actually be calculating it, that they would have many more calculations, but we would do two things, that we would require them to use as much information as available, and then as Dr. Peterson said, if we were to go back, then we would say, well, you know, of all the variables that are available in the chart, was it really used if we were to do an audit? So those are the two approaches. We would be open if there are suggestions that people feel like we need something more objective that goes, you know, further, but we did do the trade-off of, in the pilot, many times cholesterol values weren't available, and it took it much more additional time to do that, and there was a lot of calculation burden on the measure side to actually calculate each one of these. So.
Scott Gazelle. I'm leaning towards Roger on this. I think this is a terrible measure, and I think it's a terrible measure because first, I do feel we need a measure that gets at appropriate use of MPI. There's, you know, everyone agrees it's growing fast, but I don't think this gets at it. And I've been staring for the last 10 minutes at the numerator, and I can't understand it. I'm sorry, maybe it is late, but what I can't understand, so the numerator is the number of, it's basically the number of stress MPI, stress echo performed in low-risk patients, with the following exclusions, and the exclusions go on and on and on, and you know, patients qualify for this numerator if asymptomatic and low risk and not any of the following, and any of the following are, they've had a stress echo, they have MPI, they have this, it goes on, and I can't understand who could get into the numerator after all these exclusions. And so it seems like we're not getting at the issue of inappropriate use of stress MPI. We might be identifying one or two patients who had inappropriate stress MPI. So I have real problems with this measure.
Can I comment on that, Richard Griffey? I mean, if you basically did, and somebody suggested and said, history of prior history of CAD or prior testing, then you would cover all of those without enumerating them, and that would make it very interpretable. It's kind of like that other, when we listed all the criteria out of the Geneva score or whatever.
I don't agree with that. I think that one of the problems with this, as structured, that this creates, is that, again, you can tick off the list, but as you described, you'd still be in the situation that if you've done it, calcium scoring, which is probably not justified, you then drop off the numerator.
Yeah.
So as I haven't faced this before, but as this has come up and I've been thinking about it a bit, I think it's probably almost categorically not a good idea to have procedures or tests excludable items, because that just encourages the guy to do something he shouldn't be doing. And so that should be a criteria. If you take the more general no known cardiac disease, well, that's a little bit different.
But also vague.
It's still vague. But one of the things about vague assignments is that psychologists, there's no psychologist, but the psychologists who study this say that if you ask people to give you information about things that are vague, they'll say, I can't do it, it's too vague. But push them and say, go ahead, do it, make the choice. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they give Gaussian distribution.
It's pretty hard for a measure, though.
Well, but vague information is not necessarily bad information.
This is done, Richard, this is done all the time, though, in measures where they'll say no prior history of cardiac disease, asterisk, and at the bottom it lists the exclusions without making it hard to interpret, but making it very usable. I don't think it's that big of a deal, personally.
Don?
I think one of the challenges here is we are, if you look at sort of the cheapness of Smith chips and some of these other technologies, we are extraordinarily close to having multivariate, very high fidelity predictions of what are, again, fairly genetically determined diseases in large part, and even some of the expression things. This sort of has a smell of something that's going to go away pretty quickly and seem obsolete to me. I mean, as you look at these things, they're moving very, very rapidly. And then you're actually going to have, I think, right now they're, sort of comparable to Framingham, but I think they're going to exceed that. If you're going to use a Framingham, that's a big data collection, workflow challenge for people to start, looking up on charts and calculating things. And I just throw
that
out.
Not that hard.
Framingham? Yeah.
This is Mike Backus. We struggled with this issue in our pre-auth process, and we kind of narrowed it down to 5 or 6 factors that essentially, as compared to the 12 or 13 that, it amounted to cholesterol and diabetes, smoking, 5 or 6, to try and streamline that down. And then essentially what we did is we assigned points to that. So as you looked at a patient, if they were high risk, depending upon what the ACC guideline was, they essentially automatically qualified. So I don't like the measure because of feasibility. From a clinical perspective, I don't see that 30-person thing as a problem, because what it says is just go back and look at the last 30. And any small institute, any institution is going to have done, 30 stress procedures, be it MPI or stress echo. I'm not sure I would also say I'm not sure this is going to go away when you look at the installed base of equipment and investment that everybody has. I think it'll be, a long time until this goes away. CMS payment reforms, notwithstanding.
Okay, try to keep new comments going. I think people are generally settling in on an opinion here. Steve?
Just very briefly, Steve Campbell, 2A and 9 and 2A 10, I'm concerned that basically poor documentation is being rewarded by excluding the patient from the denominator. Yeah. I think that's just that to me is schizophrenic.
Okay.
So four quick comments. One is the stress MRI should be included. The second one is I like the measure, again, because this is a real problem and it's an important problem, although, again, we haven't solved on how to measure it. So as written, not great, but, again, clearly agreeing that this is a problem. The exclusion criteria, I think people – let me just defend those for a second. I think there's two – that big long list is meant to say two things. One is the first half are what you said. There are known history of coronary heart disease, and so we can just get rid of those. Remember, the second half is there because of the initial assessment. And I wasn't sure why this had to focus on the initial assessment of a patient, an asymptomatic patient. I mean, the second time an asymptomatic patient's being assessed is even worse than the first time. So no one catches those two. So the second list of tests is, oh, no, they've already had a test.
I still feel
go ahead and do another one. So I'd love to hear the logic of why it's focused on initial assessment. But that's what the second half of those tests are for, because there are a few people who have already been assessed. Lastly, again, I just don't know where the data comes from. I mean, if this is coming from, I can't believe that we're going to review data charts, clinic charts, and requisitions, and maybe I'm just naive, and find things that say, 42-year-old guy, doing great, EKG normal, planned stress. And then the rec, you got to check a box on the rec, and the rec has boxes on it. Can you really submit a rec to your stress lab that they'll take that says none? Asymptomatic? I mean, right? I mean,
we see it.
So,
we see it.
No, not with imaging. They get exercise EKG. They don't get nuclear. They don't get echo. So, I mean, in our lab, we don't do those. That's why I like the lab measure.
This is Mike Beck. I can tell you from our data, and I'm sure NIA would corroborate it, and we have a huge focus in cardiac right now, as lots of people with the ACC know. In stress echo, in MPI, we routinely see between 4% and 5% of the requests that come in the door that after discussion the physician either withdraws or not. And in stress echo, frankly, we see it higher. And when we look at the demographic data of the patients, what we tend to find is that MPI is ordered more on older men, stress echo is ordered more on younger women, and relative to the risk score or pretest probability, MPI tends to be ordered on essentially sicker men, and stress echo, you know, is essentially ordered on healthier women. And in the stress echo realm, we see higher withdrawal rates and stuff than that. So I would tell you that, you know, the ACC and their pilots came up with numbers in the, you know, 15% inappropriate, 15% questionable, you know, 70% all good. Those are more stunning numbers to me than we come up with when we do pre-auth. But we see it. We see it all the time.
5% of the
time. So is this fixable?
If we think
it's a problem.
If you just said no CAD, you wouldn't get at everybody. You'd get the tip of the iceberg, right? I mean,
you get a lot.
Low risk and no known CAD.
And if you fix the denominator?
Meaning get rid of the exclusions for no information?
Yeah.
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 Right?
Yeah.
So will we have something that we could approve with?
Well, the only other thing would be the assessment of low risk.
Risk, right.
How do you determine low risk? It sounds like
if we demand Framingham, it's going to, the feasibility goes to.
The question is something better than nothing.
Although, as Eric pointed out, you tend to overestimate risk rather than underestimate it. So it might not be such a bad thing.
If someone's asymptomatic, I guess they could be internally high.
Oh, so the doc says they're low risk. Yeah, maybe they're no risk. They want to screen them even better. Yeah.
Well,
the tendency in that setting is to try to come up with something that will get to the test. You decided you want the test for whatever reason. Maybe the patient said he wanted the test, and So, okay, well, how can I get this for you, Joe? Well, intermediate.
Okay, Joe, in the interest of time, you've heard the major complaints and comments about suggested changes. Do you want to make some general comments, and then maybe we'll have you respond to a few specifics? So, general?
Sure. General, this is, as people have been saying, an issue, and so it was the most frequent inappropriate indication that we found in our pilot, and so one of the reasons why we are putting a measure forward in this area. So not to focus on it, you know, would not look at a frequent inappropriate, a large percentage of the inappropriate. The exclusion of not recorded, it's just a matter of fact that when you go to do these measures, some data will be missing. The original first measure was to balance that out, so if you underreported, you would come out on that measure poorly. If that had to come out, we could see that, but you'll still be adding those patients back in and increasing your denominator, making your inappropriate rate look better. So we would still encourage you to keep that exclusion in, because at least your denominator becomes smaller, so even if you don't have the data for whatever reason, it reports the true inappropriate. If you don't have the data, you can't report it or look at it, and so it would just automatically fall into the denominator and make you look better. And then the reason why we focused on initial was because there are concerns if once you're passed and you say you do have a calcium score that's really high, you're no longer in the initial risk assessment period, and so there is a difference there. And how do you handle patients where you already have some information? They're no longer truly patients that can be assessed by Framingham because you have additional data now. So those are the three.
If I could comment on the denominator exclusion, I think what our feeling is they should not be excluded from the denominator, but they would also then end up in the numerator as being inappropriate.
You wouldn't have enough information.
Okay, so they're inappropriate. If you don't have the information, they're inappropriate.
So but you don't know that they might have been sent for some other reason that we're not tracking, because there are more reasons than just PCI, asymptomatic patients, and the periop patients. So they could be symptomatic patients. You just don't have information.
We would agree that the part of the hope here is that we're documenting the reason for appropriate imaging. And if it's not documented, then it's inappropriate. Inappropriate imaging. Got to have some reason for it.
And since the public reporting to this, there will be a strong indication for sites to appropriately document why they're doing what they're doing.
They don't have a reason for any of
them. So they would be added.
I mean, I can talk to a patient for an hour about smoking cessation. If I didn't put it, if I didn't write it down, you know, I get dinged on it.
So it would get added back into all the numerators for each of the three measures we're discussing then. If you don't have enough information, you depends on how much information, I guess, you have and which ones to go in. But, I mean, if you have, you know, very little information or symptom status or things like that, it just goes into all three, or you don't have enough history on PCI. That was the challenge that we had. Where to, you know, how do you add them back in and make them inappropriate? Because then you end up double counting them in the measure.
I don't see how they're double counted there. So if somebody ends up in the denominator from having had one of these exams, and they end up in the numerator for having had one where there are not documented indications essentially for it being appropriate. So it's not double counting.
Well, it would be counted in this measure, the PCI measure, and the periop measure.
Well, we're just considering one measure right now. We're not voting on them as a block.
Right, but he's saying
correct.
The problem exists in PCI.
But we haven't approved it.
No, PCI has already did
right.
PCI.
But it goes for recommendation, right? I mean, we shouldn't reuse the fact that it might be also included in the other one to support this measure. I think
no,
we're coming out
no,
against
he's
this
saying
measure
the other
anyway.
I think he's saying the other direction.
And I think he's probably right, but we're not talking about it.
Right.
Right. So
yeah.
We probably revisit that question
about
inclusion and that
measure
if we
right.
all
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Were there other proposal? I think you mentioned was that would there be any problem in expanding this to MRI?
No. To MRI?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Were there anything else in yours, Kirk?
No, I don't know that we fixed the two that... No, nothing new.
Were there other things that we didn't... Well, I mean, I guess the point is there anything else you want him to address, or are we going to vote on what we have? Is there any way else to improve the measure, at least on your belief, or want him to address answers why we don't have something better?
And I think if we actually think there's something we want him to improve, then again, I think the resubmitted measure should come back in, and we should actually vote on that.
Yeah.
I think it's probably substantially different from what's in front of you.
Well, maybe it might be helpful to have committee discussion about the initial assessment again. I mean, you gave an example of C, you know, of calcium score. I think that's a very unique situation. I mean, you know, prior, how about prior testing? You know, that gets covered because that's prior evidence of CAD, so that's not a good example.
Well,
right?
Prior testing, you could have a critical stress test, which often happens on exercise. Just standard treadmill without imaging, and so now you have a patient who you have initial global risk assessment, but you have a non-determinant exercise test and what to do with them.
But that's a code, abnormal cardiovascular test. I mean, I guess, why not? I mean, what if your prior testing was normal? I'm just trying to get rid of normal testing on top of a normal test.
Right, we do have appropriate use. We didn't develop a measure around the repeat testing because we didn't find in the pilot that it was coming up as frequently as the things that we put forward. An additional measure for repeat testing could be constructed.
All right, so equivocal. So your prior test was equivocal, so you didn't have CAD, definitely, and... And if it was normal, I just don't know why a prior normal echo makes it okay to get an inappropriate stress nuclear.
It wouldn't. It would still fall under our criteria as being inappropriate. We just aren't measuring it with this particular measure.
And denominator.
And denominator.
Yeah, oh, right. Comes out of both. Okay, no, so then it would still catch... Doesn't catch everybody, would catch some. So doesn't fake the number, just, yeah, we lose catching it. Okay.
I think we need a measure with more teeth than this one. I think everyone agrees that overuse of stress imaging is a big deal. I just am not convinced this is going to catch much of it. And so I don't think it's of value.
Okay. Any other comments internally? So I guess the options now are two. One of them would be to say we need to have substantial changes to the measure that we currently have and have a revote of this externally, or we say, no, we have enough information here. Substantial changes would not change how we would currently vote today. And we... move it forward to our vote.
And specifically, the changes would include the risk assessment, the exclusion criteria, and this issue with
the denominator
data.
Okay. So, in addition to MRI. So, let's have a vote. The vote is going to, just to be clear, the vote is substantial changes versus no, we want to vote on this today. If we want to vote on it today, then we will accept... only minor changes, I guess the MRI could theoretically be put in there. Everything else is more substantial, and we would vote on it up or down based on that change.
Well,
does that work?
With some of the other measures, we've had a send those changes.
Well, right, that's what we're but I guess the similar to what we did before, do we think that would there be interest on us to re-see that?
Do you want to essentially have this measure attempt to come back with substantial changes as a value,
outlined and then review it at a later date.
Or not.
Or not.
That's basically what we're asking. Okay. How many would vote to be reasonable to reconsider the measure after substantial changes? Okay.
Okay, we're done.
Great. Joe, you're going to get substantial changes requested.
But again, with no guarantee.
With no guarantee.
All of it is discussed.
Absolutely.
With conditions, but conditions
right.
Come back to you.
And they can choose not to resubmit and say, we don't care to do this. Okay. Next. Two more. Okay, we are at...
with a pre-op ACC, if you want to do this.
Yes, pre-op ACC. Let's get Joe done.
All right.
Sorry.
Okay. This is Troy Fessler. I've got the pre-op ACC, and then Don's doing the pre-op CMS.
Can you give us a number, please?
It is... Sorry, let me find it.
14-10
is what we're on now. And they are very similar. I'll warn you ahead of time.
The two to you, then.
Yes. So for this measure, it is essentially looking at cardiac stress imaging in pre-op evaluation of low-risk patients. Pre-operative evaluation of a low-risk surgery patient.
Low-risk.
For example, cataract surgery, there's a long list of others, endoscopy, so on and so forth. Something I do every week doing these kind of clearances in the office. So the numerator is the number of stress echocardiograms.
Stress echo lab next door.
Yeah. The number of stress echocardiograms, checked MPIs, in low-risk surgery patients as part of preoperative evaluation. That's your numerator. Your denominator is the number of SPECT MPI and stress echocardiograms performed overall. Now, I mentioned that specifically because the second measure has a different denominator and looks at the same issue in a different way. So to go through it item by item, the 1A high impact, I gave it an M as in Martin, and the question I have is overall volume of these procedures as a percentage of the total number of SPECT and echoes. I very rarely ever send any of these low-risk patients on for additional imaging. And if they do, they've got symptoms or have very low MET scores or things like that. That's what I was asking earlier for overall prevalence data.
Yeah, Joe, I don't know if you want to give this as well.
Sure, that's a quick answer. It is variable by institution. Some institutions have a high volume of this and have an issue with this, and others don't. They just on the referral pattern, so there would be variability both on referral patterns, but also in the amount of time that they've addressed this. So in some cases, there will be a very low volume of periop cases. In other cases, it was the number one or number two issue at some institution.
So in terms of overall inappropriate specs and echoes, how does it compare to the asymptomatic patients getting them and the post-CABG or PCI patients getting them? Like, how big a slice of the pie is this overuse?
Again, it depends on the institution. Some, it was the biggest piece of the pie. Others, it was the smallest piece of the pie.
Well, but from the nuclear...
It was always in the top four issues.
Right. From your paper, of percentage of inappropriate studies, the asymptomatic low-risk CHD was 45%. The post-PCI was 24%. The pre-op was 3.7%. That.
Right. So in our pilot, we had all outpatient cardiology practices, and so they didn't tend to deal as much with hospital-based referrals from anesthesiologists, and so it was very low in our pilot. Other studies, it was much higher when they had a closer association of the lab with anesthesiology, especially in an outpatient imaging hospital setting.
Anyway, my practice experience is low-risk surgery patients generally we're doing in the outpatient setting. When I'm doing these in the hospital, it's generally high-risk surgery or intermediate-risk surgery and a higher-risk patient. It seems to stratify pretty starkly. But thanks for the information. For 1B, opportunity for improvement, I gave this an M also, and it ties into the low overall percentage of this inappropriate test in view of all the tests. In terms of 1C, relationship to outcomes, I agree the evidence says these shouldn't be done and the standard should be zero, so I did give that a C. Uh, So to come to the end with threshold criteria of importance met, I hesitate to say yes based on the overall prevalence. If we're going to drive this to zero, that can impact the overall problem as much as driving the other numbers to zero, the asymptomatic patient or the post-CABG patient. I personally think it should never be done. I agree completely. But I'm not sure this is where efforts should be focused.
Okay.
And you want me to stop there or keep going?
Should we vote on it?
Well, I think that we need discussion about the vote on importance then.
And I welcome other people's
yeah.
opinions. I'm really on the fence. Personally, I think one thing, looking societally and in terms of the healthcare system, I hesitate.
I mean, one additional data point on the 10 things that Troy and I talked about was that in the numbers on the CMS, on the Lewin group data, I think, you know, the average they were saying, you know, there's a big issue on what exactly the mix of low risk, because there are two very different definitions of low risk in these two measures. But the incidence of the study in low risk was 0.005 on average. So that would be one in 200 Medicare patients, as I understand the math, are getting, in the Lewin analysis, are getting that. The top 1%, so the heaviest users, I think, are roughly 1 in 40. So you're plowing through a lot of old folks who presumably, you know, if any of them have any kind of sort of little symptoms, especially when you consider that over the 30 days, yours was 60, you know, what Troy looked at was 60 in 30 days. If you're 65 to 85, you have 200 roughly, if you live 20 years on average under Medicare, you have, you know, 240 month-long cohorts of 30. And so if you have one stress just in general, you're basically at 0.005 as the rate, even skipping any surgery or relationship to surgery. So some of these numbers look, at least by this, look to be very low, and I think neither of them had risk stratification of the patient as opposed to risk stratification of the procedure. Just throw that out.
So it's interesting. I just looking up some of the references that were given. The Mayo study done by Dr. Gibbons, it appears that, unless I'm misreading this, that other than asymptomatic testing in an asymptomatic population, I guess it's double, just low-risk population, that pre-op testing was the second most common and very close in its order of magnitude. So of inappropriate testing, this is a big one.
That's at the Mayo Clinic.
That's the Mayo Clinic. Well,
okay.
I mean, yeah, that's true. Second rate in
I'm not sure you're talking about that.
It's not Duke.
Too many people get a
chance to say you need one.
Yeah, I can find a few more here. He has a couple other studies. But there was other comments while we were waiting.
So you're saying it's a big problem, potentially.
I'm thinking, according to this, it is. And in our general gestalt, I think as a cardiologist, Kurt, were you? I think that actually pre-op testing in general is one of the big abuse areas that could be cut back pretty easily.
So then we should go on.
It's mostly the issues of people not being knowledgeable about the pre-op guidelines.
This is also probably a pretty significant bias in general versus specialists. So I think if you're in cardiology practice,
and
cardiologist, the access and the likely utilization of these tests is very
different. Yeah. Everybody that gets sent to us gets tested because we feel they sent them to us for pre-op evaluation, so we test.
And as primary care, I'm sending
not,
the person
not because
to
of
that.
The paid,
yeah,
but it's because
I'm not sending the ones.
Medical. This is maybe even a little bit of medical.
So from a payer perspective, this is a very serious problem because it's the number should be zero, and I'm torn a bit because I see the problems we're talking about here. Having a measure as a starting point for management, and we don't have it. We all know it's out there. It's an interesting point that it seems to vary a great deal from institution to type to institution. I think that's important. It probably varies across other elements. The domains of the
section. Judy, I think one question will be this measure versus the CMS measure. So I think something has to be done in this area. I totally agree. One vote, who knows, is the question.
Yeah, we had that question too. We'll bring it up at the end. So I can go ahead and continue then. So if we go to 2A, measure specifications, we already talked about the 60-day time period. The ACC folks felt that replicated 12 months. So initially I was happy with the numerator being just spec MPI and stress factor. Do we need to add stress MRI, which we'll just see what this measure does? That's the question.
And maybe, I can't imagine anybody doing a CTA for pre-op assessment, but
there's someone out there.
Not yet.
Yeah, no, but I would put it in there.
Okay. For the denominator, the same issue, they have the same exclusion of insufficient data to get kicked out. I would add those patients back in, agreeing to previous discussion. In terms of testing and analysis, I gave it an N because it said no direct reliability testing done. This is 2B. I don't think that's a make or break, but it sounds like some more testing needs to be done with this measure. 2C, I gave it a C. To me, it's clear the evidence says you shouldn't do this. Summary of evidence supporting the exclusions is 2D. I think we need to kick out the inadequate data exclusion. So I gave it an M based on that. In terms of 2F, I gave it a P and a little bit of a question. And the answer is in part with the wide variability. Maybe there are some high outliers that we can chase and get to correct their behavior. So I'm okay with that. One thing I threw in there, too, is there was not risk stratification of the patients. The risk stratification solely surgery type, which is a standard question. But when I do this, I'm doing least widespread risk index. I'm asking other questions, trying to follow ACC guidelines. What are your thoughts about patient risk being put into this, or why did you leave out patient risk?
Well, so, I mean, for minimal risk surgery, remember, patient risk actually doesn't even enter in. You just can't have unstable angina, unstable arrhythmias, or being fulminant heart failure. So the risk, patient risk stratification, as long as you don't have basically having an acute MI, an NVT, or heart failure, you don't have to risk assess anymore in the new guideline. You don't even get into the METs if it's low risk surgery. That's what one of the changes was.
Okay.
So really, low risk is low risk.
None of that is actually asking either of these. So, you know, active engine or something.
Right. So the patient
or shortness of breath or whatever.
Yeah. So whatever the table and the guidelines is.
None of that is
that. You can't have one of these six.
Right.
Sure.
Which wouldn't again be a problem except for the fact that if you have these very low ends, you know, 1 in 200. You can certainly imagine 1 in 200 elderly patients are having some kind of active cardiac disease.
Right, but all the things on that list, it's grossly inappropriate to send them to stress test too. So that's why it kind of doesn't matter for this measure. I mean, people in fulminant heart failure and VT and an MI probably shouldn't go to the stress lab either.
Right. Not measured either.
Okay.
It's a new measure.
All right, so go to number 3, usability. I gave it a P, and that's probably based on my question about the prevalence. For 3A, rather, I gave that a P. 3B, harmonization. I gave that an M. And to me, the issue is the CMS measure is extremely similar, and we need to address that. 3C, distinctive or additive value. I gave it a P. It's the same issue. There's a companion measure that's very similar. So overall, I would say P, but we have to address the issue of the second measure and how to handle this. In terms of feasibility, 4A gave it a P. 4B gave it a P, but it's going to require a paper data capture tool, at least by what I saw here. That's going to be then as an issue, because that's how they proposed to do it. So I'd wonder if it could be done solely by administrative data. So overall feasibility, I give it a P. Overall recommend for endorsement. I think I might put that to a vote. It's the prevalence question that just sticks. In principle, I agree with driving this to zero completely.
Okay. Comments from the group? Yes, sorry.
Helen, maybe you could address this. I still have problems with this 60-day sampling period as opposed to a whole year. I mean, it seems that most of these measures are burdensome, and yet most of them we require a year's worth of data. Is there a precedent in the NQF for other measures that have, you know, just sampling?
Whatever sampling frame is appropriate as long as it's justified.
But, I mean, are there other measures that are, you know, only a sort of randomly chosen month or two out of the year?
With the 60 days or 60 days within surgery?
I thought it was
60 days within surgery as opposed to 30 days within surgery.
Okay.
Can you clarify, Joe?
The 60-day sampling period.
Yeah,
sampling.
The day and
that
do
with
surgery.
30 days of surgery.
Oh, okay. Oh, I missed surgery.
Yeah, it's
okay.
A 60-day sampling period, select a starting month, you know, January, March, May, et cetera. Begin a 60-day sampling period, and you must have at least 30 stress echo or SPECT orders within it. So it seems like, you know, that's
a
fairly low
frame with a reasonable number to measure.
But it's a fairly low threshold just to get 30.
Oh, these pre-ops at the what rates you're talking about? I mean, you know,
30 numerator events, you're saying.
Right, 30 numerator events,
that's
I think.
That's a lot.
Is
yeah,
a lot.
That's huge.
For
yeah.
These
no,
Jeff,
no,
the
no,
there was a numerator event.
No,
right. I mean, unless you have some real outliers who are ordering it on every cataract or every colonoscopy, you're not going to get that.
So, yeah, so it's not going to be 60, not going to happen in 60 days anyways.
Other comments?
Yeah. This is Kirk Spencer. My quick comment was, again, I think we let them off the hook too easy. I'd like to hear the justification on the pre-op. Apparently, if you put any other indication for the stress, you don't get in the numerator, or you don't get in the, you know, you don't get counted at all. So, if you put pre-op and you check the box that says remote history of CAD or abnormal EKG, this measure doesn't count you. And they should count. I don't care what other symptoms you have. If you're going for a low-risk surgery, and you're being pre-op, there's nothing else you can check on the box that makes it appropriate, I don't think. Is there?
APT? Joe, can you respond?
Sure. We did include that no other reason is recorded for the imaging, because if you have a high pre-test probability patient who would have otherwise qualified, now, you know, this comes to a feasibility issue. Can you get, you know, the additional data to, and we did, in this case, leave it more vague.
But the reason for it was because
there are other reasons that a patient could show up that you would, there would be a justification for the test.
Right. There are certainly other reasons to have a stress test coincidentally 30 days before your surgery, but I thought I read that literally is what the requisition says. So if the requisition says pre-op and abnormal EKG, right? I mean, just
right.
So you're saying
right.
Let the people off the hook who are trying to then don't check the pre-op box. Just check the box that says abnormal EKG. That's my point. If you're checking pre-op on the box,
right,
you need to make sure it's valid. So maybe that's an education issue. With people see their score is high and they just say, oh, I better just check the chest pain and not check the pre-op box, right? I mean, that's what I'm getting. If they say pre-op,
right, whether or not they
should
just record it, yeah, is the primary reason, and just not record pre-op if it is.
Oh,
that's a reasonable.
Secondary. I don't care. When we get on the.
So, just as a clarification of the 60-day, it's not numerator; it's denominator. And so,
right.
Given the rate, you could get to 30 stress spec tests ordered and have zero just because of sampling error, because the rate is so low.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's sufficient.
Be 3 days we could be at 30.
Yeah, 30 orders placed. It just says determine if you've had that many orders placed. So I think that's a real problem with this measure.
Isn't that true in the previous one, too?
Yeah.
Also had
I
had a problem with the previous one, too, but we didn't like the previous one for other reasons.
So to clarify, on both of these, we would want to have no sampling be a year. Yes.
Yeah. Sounds like it needs to be longer.
Yes. So when he comes back, Joe, that's an indication for the next time you bring back the next prior measure and this one, people would want it for a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Were there other comments on this one? Joe, you haven't spoken yet to some of the issues that you heard around the table. Were there? Do you have more things to say?
You know, I heard a lot about, you know, the volume and whether or not this is, you know, an issue. So I think I've spoken to that, and there's been a number of comments around the table. You know, most of the other comments for the 60-day window, the adding stress MRI and CTE, you know, those were all things that we could consider.
Yeah, the one question I had on record was, your definition of low risk in this measure, not in the CMS measure, is a 1% MI or mortality rate.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, to me, that seems like a pretty high. I mean, my understanding is that well done cabbages have a mortality rate now high 1%, you know, under 2%. So I'm thinking a 1%, 0.9 in some procedure, let's say, morbidity mortality rate is actually a fairly high risk procedure. I don't know, that part of the definition seemed a little, it seems like there would be some better definition for that or some clarification. In part, this is motivated by knowing on the CMS list there's a very heterogeneous list of procedures with orders of magnitude difference in risk on that list.
So, you know, the definition is taken from the guideline, and so that is what we chose based on, you know, what the guideline had and what the literature was to support the guideline. And so
yep.
There were other data to support a different cut point, you know, we'd be open to it, but that's why we chose the 1%.
The general anesthesia was very proud of themselves when they went from 1 in 10,000 mortality to 1 in 30,000 when they instituted pulse ox. Just to put 1 in 100, or if you will, you know, whatever that is, 110,000 in the perspective in terms of risk.
Yeah, I think the question's been, have we been able to shift that risk much with further testing? And that, I think, is very unclear when you get to lower people. Yes.
A quick question I didn't ask earlier. Is site of testing an issue, or is it all tests done anywhere, meaning physician's office versus outpatient imaging department versus freestanding facility?
This is anywhere.
Okay.
Yes.
Because the CMS data that we'll look at shows the decline in testing use in hospitals, outpatient, increase in physician offices.
Okay. So the options here, we're at a juncture point, unless there's further comments. We can either break now and review the CMS measure, which is the same topic but a different data set and a slightly different variables, which we can go through, and then vote on both. Or we could have this one revised and brought back to the group. I don't think we're ready quite yet to vote on this alone. What would your pleasure be? CMS?
Yeah.
Yeah.
CMS. Okay.
I'd like to get that out there.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
CMS.
Almost the same.
All right. Who's got it?
All right.
Thank
so,
you.
Yeah. So moving through that very quickly,
give us
since
the
I think
number
we discussed
on
everything.
What number?
This is 10-10. So impact, we discussed spec, I believe, at length. So I would say that's sort of a P. It's clearly spec in of itself is clearly an issue. You know, the pre-op, I defer to the numbers that were cited. 1B, opportunity for improvement. I would put that as a partial too. Again, my two concerns here were in the Lewin group analysis, the rate that they cited of 0.005, you know, as a ratio of pre-op tests here to low-risk surgery, that 1 in 200 patients. I just wonder, when you have something that's 1 in 200, so 199 people aren't doing it, and one person's doing it, I just wonder what, I think there may be some reasons for there that are quite rational as opposed to just.
Was the analysis, again, limited only to hospital outpatient departments on this one?
Yeah.
So it would significantly expand the numbers if you went beyond hospital outpatient departments, right?
I think the Lewis element is just a ratio.
No, but it's still.
Right,
outpatient.
Okay. All right.
Everybody.
All right. we talked about that. 1C, outcome or evidence support measure. I was unclear about that. I guess I'll have to give it an M. As far as I could tell from the references here, there wasn't any actual research cited. These were, as far as I could tell, all guidelines. So this was a series of, just various guidelines. I don't...
Most of our evidence is based on guidelines. That's actually...
Okay. All right. So they were based on, guidelines. All right. Okay. If that's your stock and trade, you got more stock. on the threshold importance, I guess if we take the numbers that Kirk gave, it was probably met. On 2A, measure specification, this is a pretty straightforward measure. It's defined the numerator, number of stress echoes, SPECT NPI, and stress MRI studies performed at the hospital outpatient facility in the 30 days preceding low-risk non-cardiac surgery. So it's a pretty crisp thing. The denominator is also relatively crisp. Number of low-risk non-cardiac surgeries performed at the hospital outpatient facility. There's no risk stratification of the patients whatsoever, including even the active MI, active heart failure. The way that the denominator is done here...
All low risk.
There's no surgery is low risk. The patient risk is totally unspecified. They could be 1 second from, demise. The denominator detail, so 2A.8 is several pages of procedures, most of which are, upper lower endoscopy, some ENT procedures, some opto procedures. There are some interesting things in here. I don't know what vascular endoscopy is. Some of these procedures seem pretty high risk. I mean, for example, there's laparoscopic gastric bypass with Roux-en-Y. If you're getting a gastric bypass procedure with a Roux-en-Y, that strikes me as different than an anoscopy or a nasal cauterization, which are also in the same list.
1%, yeah.
So,
not to mention you're 450 pounds if you're having that done.
Right, exactly. So this is a different assigned mix by what's given here, different than just the 1% or 1-5% ratio. Some other things, pilotomy. On the very lowest, rhinoscopy, epistaxis control, which I think is a swizzle stick. Anoscopy, which I generally don't do under general. So those are the procedures. Risk adjustment, we talked about no risk adjustment. 2B, reliability testing. I think here there's the same text that shows up in a lot of these, which is minimum case counts were developed to ensure 90% confidence level. Case count requirements range between 31 and 67. Again, to echo Ray's comments, I don't understand the statistical validity of requiring 31 to 67 patients when you have something that averages 1 in 200. And the worst case, the absolute worst case, I think was cited as, the top worst 1% was around 1 in 40 or 1 in 35. So that, those numbers seem off to me, just from a raw power conclusion. 2C, validity. I think that, the claims of claims are, I would say that's a C. Exclusions, there are essentially none, so I made that NA. Risk adjustment, we talked about, is the N, my worry. 2F, identification of meaningful difference in performance. Again, it's the same issue with the number. 2G, comparability NA, disparities NA. Overall, scientific acceptability, because of the issues, the risk, I would say that it's an M. On the usability, I thought, other than the risk stratification, I thought it was a P, so that would work. Harmonization, obviously we've already discussed. Distinct added value, again, that's sort of the same harmonization. Feasibility, I would say those were all C's to me, other than 4D. because I think it's pretty feasible to do off the claims data for Medicare. I think that's a very straightforward thing. That RIC procedure is what I would make it a P on 4D, but so the other is a 4E also with C. So I guess that's all I have to say about it.
Okay, we have an issue. We're going to lose two more of us now. That would be your two chairs.
That's
probably not a good thing. So I guess the question, I'm sorry about this, but I've got a 4:40 flight. I've got a good one.
Can we vote about importance?
So I guess the question is, we could vote about importance. I think the answer, well, let's try it. How many think that this measure meets importance?
Just this one or just two?
Just the one.
Just
so
this measure.
We haven't voted on the
right. I think it's going to make it importance, unfortunately. I don't think it's going to be dinged on that.
Yeah.
So it's going to need to go to the question of vision. I think we need to probably have another call to finish this and the other measure. It would be unfair to CMS not to have that.
Yeah.
And we can invite them and ACC both on that call.
Yeah.
Sorry. But, okay. Okay. So thanks for your work. Thank you, guys.
All right.